Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Stand-up comedian Cameron Esposito will perform at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts at 8 p.m. this coming Saturday.
Oh, I guess I should, are there any straight people here? Okay, yeah. A couple people. It's okay. You don't have to feel weird. This is a safe space, honestly. I'm an advocate and an ally. I want you to know that. You know, just to be kind of honest and vulnerable with you guys, my parents are straight. Yeah. So I've seen their relationship, and I know there can be real love there.
Cameron Esposito has been named a comic to watch by LA Weekly, Time Out Los Angeles, Jezebel, Los Angeles Magazine, and Cosmopolitan Magazine. She hosts Put Your Hands Together, a weekly stand-up showcase and podcast out of UCB in Los Angeles, and co-hosts Wham Bam Pow, an action and sci-fi movie cast. Her bi-weekly column for the Onion's AV Club is Who in the World is Cameron Esposito, and she joins us now. Cameron, welcome to the Roundtable.
Oh, thank you. This table is indeed very round.
I don't know how we're going to talk about everything that you do in the time we have allotted for this interview.
Yeah, I mean, if you could just make sure to cover my entire life, I will not feel like we've had a good interview. I'll just stay on the line.
Yeah, just stay on?
Yeah, we can keep talking, even if it's off air. You know? Get to all of it.
So how did you, I know there's a whole bunch of how did yous, but we'll start with how did you decide that you wanted to go into stand-up?
I kind of backed into it, is what I always say. Like, I started doing improv in college. I went to a school in Boston where Amy Poehler had gone there. She was in the same improv group that I was, like, 10 years before I was in it. And so at the time that I was in school, she was on SNL starting to have some success, and it was just the first time I thought, oh, you could just, like, goof around on campus and, like, immediately be on SNL, which is not actually, it turns out, how Saturday Night Live works. They are not
right.
Recruiting directly from Boston College. But just seeing that as a possible future, I still didn't really understand how you make that a job. Mm-hmm. So it was just something that the day after I graduated from school, I auditioned for an improv theater and got cast as a cast member there and started working professionally in comedy, like, immediately. But I had day jobs as well. And I just really thought that's what everybody did. You know, like, I just really thought, like, everybody had two different lives and two different jobs. You know, like, I really wondered what Ellen did during the day when she wasn't on her show, or at night, rather. She has a daytime show.
A lot of them do, you know, a lot of people starting out do that for a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then how did you transition from having the day job to not having the day job?
You know, really just time. Mm-hmm. I moved back home to my hometown, Chicago, and was working, just a series of different day jobs. Like, I was working as a law clerk, or I was a nanny, and I just started doing more and more stand-up at night. And I'm kind of a hustler, or like a schemer in a good way, in that I figured out over time how to kind of cobble together a living from a bunch of different sources that were all stand-up related. You know, so, like, I knew I could make this much money doing this show on this night, and then if I taught stand-up classes, and if I also toured here and worked as a circus ringmaster for a while, like, I just put everything together into a big pot and then eventually was able to make my living doing only comedy.
Can you tell me more about working as a ringmaster? How do you get into
sure.
that gig, and what are some of the standout circus stories you have?
The wonderful thing about starting in a city that isn't New York or LA is that because there's no real industry in a larger sense, you know, there's no real entertainment industry, a lot of artists kind of work together or collaborate or know each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in Chicago, where I started, across all disciplines, artists kind of bumped into each other a lot. So I had these friends that were circus performers. They were looking for somebody to tour with them. You know, they're like Cirque du Soleil type circus people, not necessarily elephants, but more like hanging from hoops 30 feet in the air.
Right. Not sloppy clowns, but really fit, muscular flippers.
Yeah, like like the hottest women in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also bench press you. That type of person. So they were looking for somebody to tour with them. I offered my services first just like, you know, one time, and then it worked so well that I just joined the circus as, like, their full-time ringmaster. So we would do shows in Chicago at this very hip warehouse space, and then we would tour the country and do shows as a group. It was wild. I was in my late 20s when this happened, and the thing is you never are prepared to join the circus unless that is specifically what you have set out to do. So all these other women that I was touring with, because our touring company was only women, this is like something they'd work for their whole lives. One of them was Australian, and you can go to school, you can go to college. She had her bachelor's in flying trapeze, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's a fantastic piece of paper to have.
Yeah, it's great. They were all really used to this, and I felt like it's one of the times in my life where, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, where suddenly you like walk through this door and you just realize like, oh, there's a whole subculture here, and there's a ton of people that do this thing and care about this thing, and I know nothing about it. So I felt like I was always just like, are you guys seeing any of this? And they were like, what are you talking about? This is completely normal. This is absolutely how our lives go. I think one particular story that's one of my favorites is we were traveling through Vegas. The circus that I was with decided the funniest place we could stay would be Circus, the casino. It's not the nicest casino, but it is the funniest place for a circus to stay. They were right. So we pulled in, we got our rooms, and we went to the pool. These women, you know, they can do stuff with apparatuses, but they can also just, like, balance on each other or things. So they started doing, like, tricks in the pool. And these dudes came over from the side of the pool, and I thought maybe we were going to get in trouble. But instead, they, like, disrobed into their swimsuits, and they jumped in. And they were from Eastern Europe, people, Cirque du Soleil people that were located in Vegas at the time. And instead of us getting in trouble, they wanted to have like a trick off, like a skills off. So like my friends were like standing on each other's shoulders, and then like one of them would flip in, and then the dudes would be like, ha ha, I didn't think so. And then like they would stand on each other's shoulders and then like flip in backwards. And it was amazing, I think, for everybody at the pool, but also there was a massive language barrier. Like, we couldn't even talk to them. It was just like flipping across the world to connect.
did either side win, or was it an amicable draw?
I think we called it a draw.
Yeah.
And just counted ourselves lucky for having had that experience at all.
I'm envious of it. It sounds amazing.
Yes.
So
yeah, the only other thing I'll tell you, this is the final circus note, is that a lot of the women I travel with, when they, because they have to bring their apparatuses like trapezes and stuff with them, because it's a personal thing. The one that you work with is the one you know how to work with. So they, when they travel, they bring like 50 hula hoops or a trapeze or whatever it is that they work with them.
Sure, like a musical instrument.
Exactly, yes. And a lot of the women that I would travel with, if they would have a trapeze or something big like that with rigging, they would travel with it in a gun box.
Oh.
Because gun boxes are really great at protecting what's inside. And so we drove over the Hoover Dam. And when you drive over the Hoover Dam, and I'm not even sure who they are, like, maybe they're state troopers or, like, national, maybe they're park rangers. People search your car.
Mm-hmm. Could be Coast Guard.
Make sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Like, well, it's
somebody.
Like something like that. So they search your car just to make sure, since you're driving over the Hoover Dam, that nothing is going to go awry. And so they, like, popped up in the back of our van, and it just looks like we have, like, 50 guns back there. But then we're like, no, no, sir, it's all trapezes. And then he's like, I'm pretty sure you guys are a bunch of liars. And then he opens all the boxes. I mean, it was great.
That's awesome. Did touring with a circus... Was that the first time you'd traveled extensively, and does it prepare you to tour as a stand-up?
You know, it was right around the same time that I was first getting booked in clubs or at festivals nationally. So definitely those experiences were part of the larger experience that I had. And I think what was cool about that is that stand-up is so individual that while I was doing all this other touring, you know, the kind of touring that I do now, while I was starting that, I was going out by myself. And I think... it was really cool to have a group of people to do it with, because those gals, you know, they live their life contract to contract and show to show, much like a stand-up does, and they were, like, really good at it. They'd been doing it for a bunch of years. So I learned, you know, some tips from them just about like how you keep your clothes clean or what you eat in order to feel good. You know, really simple day-to-day stuff that's actually very hard to figure out when you're first starting to live on the road.
No, I can only imagine because I, you know, don't tour but take road trips and always feel like crap afterwards. Yeah, you just eat combos and you're like, why don't I feel very well?
Well, number one, combos are delicious. But
of course.
You cannot eat those. Yeah, you cannot eat those. Yeah, you have to really develop a system of, you know, like the bag that you pack and then just you take those clothes out and you basically wash them and put them back in, you know, and you know the boots that you always wear and you know the face lotion that you always get, and it's just, it's like repetition of the same thing.
You mentioned when I asked you how you started stand-up that you started doing improv in college, which is also when you discovered that you were a lesbian, when you discovered that you were gay.
True.
And I know this is a story you tell on stage and all the time anybody speaks to you, but it is who you are, so I have to ask you to tell the story too. Why? How did you not realize that you were gay until you were 20, and then how did you go about figuring it out, working it into your life, telling your family, et cetera?
Well, I didn't realize I was gay until I was 20 because I was raised in a very conservative suburb outside Chicago in a Italian Catholic family, in an Italian Catholic family, and we didn't have cable. I mean, I had no idea that gay people were real. I didn't meet any gay people. I knew no openly gay people. And the only thing I was taught about being gay was what I was taught at school, which is that it was a choice or that it was a sin, because I went to Catholic school my whole life. So I just never, it never occurred to me. I had all these feelings, but I really thought that's how all women felt. And if you read, like, Cosmopolitan magazine, it doesn't say that's not how women feel.
Right.
I will say that, I think for women especially, we're taught that it's okay to have really close friendships, and we're taught that it's okay to be, like, intimate in some ways with your friends, you know, hugging or, like, wanting to have sleepovers. And I just thought that's, like, what everybody meant.
Mm-hmm.
we just, like, really want our boyfriends to go home, and we were willing to hang out with our best friends forever. And it was when I was 20, I was in school at a conservative Catholic college, and I kissed a woman for the first time. She was somebody that I met because I was in this, like, social justice crowd where we would take solidarity trips and go hang out with the poor and look into their eyes and be like, we're here to witness this, and then just, like, leave and
right.
go back to our college that our parents were paying for. So it was really nice of us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can tell, I have very conflicted feelings.
No, I know. I understand.
But it did change me as a person, so I appreciate that aspect. But one of these women that I met that I had all these similar interests with, and she really cared about, like, politics and advocacy, I just had no idea that I was actually attracted to her. And late one night, we had, like, split a bottle of wine, so I was feeling a little bit more, I would say, loose.
Right, free. Mm-hmm.
And I kissed her, and it was an immediate understanding of everything else that had happened in my life, because I'd had boyfriends, really serious boyfriends, and it had never felt like that. But just knowing that information didn't immediately solve the issue of how to work that into my life, because I have a really conservative Catholic family, and it took a bunch of years of trying to figure out exactly how to come out to them and then coming out to them and having that be really stressful and straining on our relationship. And then maybe in some ways they're realizing it wasn't going to go away, and then in other ways they're realizing that I was still okay. Because I think that's the other thing that a lot of parents go through when their kids come out, is that they really wonder if that kid can still have a good life. My parents just didn't know. They knew no, I had no example for what a gay person could be, but they didn't either. So we kind of figured it out together. Now things are great.
Good. And you're engaged?
I'm engaged, and they will be at the wedding, totally crying their eyes out with joy, which is awesome. We're getting married in December. I'm really excited about it.
And I have heard in other sets or on podcasts that I've heard you on that you were struggling with who does the, not to be overgeneral or post-feminist sexist, but who does the girly stuff for the wedding, because you're both kind of like butch lesbians, and you don't know who, like, who's picking the flowers, what's going on? Have you found somebody to do that for you?
We're still working on it.
Yeah.
I mean, we settled on a venue, and I think that venue is helpful because we're getting married at a rock club. So I think that's going to take away some of the stress and strain. I really think this is real. There's two things going on. Number one, my fiancé Rhea and I mean, yeah, we love flowers.
Right.
And cupcakes are cool, but I don't know how to plan a wedding. That's, like, not something that I can connect to at all as a priority. But I think on top of that, it's not something I ever had to think about or that I ever could think about, like, that I was ever given the gift of being able to think about. So I think there's also that where, like, the wonderful thing about equal marriage is that it is the right time for this to happen because this is how it should be. There's no reason that we can't be married. We love each other. We want to have a life together. There's so many great things about it. And the only negative thing is that, like, it's all so brand new, you know? So we're, like, stepping into this. A lot of people that get married, it's something they've been thinking about since they were kids. And it's not something I've been thinking about since I was a kid. It's something I've been thinking about for, like, the last 2 years. So I don't know what a marriage looks like or a wedding looks like. It's all something that I'm trying to figure out as I go.
You write biweekly columns for the AV Club, Who in the World is Cameron Esposito, which I love as a who in the world is. Like, saw it immediately.
Exactly,
I was like,
right. That's
perfect.
How you're supposed to sing it.
Yeah, of course. You write them biweekly. How do you decide what you'll write about when you write your column for the AV Club?
You know, it really is just like whatever pops out of me. I like kind of sit down and I think about the week that I've had over the last 2 weeks. It just sort of happens. I don't mean that in like, that sounds so, God, I sound so insufferable saying that, but it's also how I've always done stand-up, which is that some people, I think, really plan out their sets and then like write word for word their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I kind of need to talk things out. Like when I have a new joke, I'll just come up with a concept and then I like talk out the wording on stage. And the column has really been the same thing. I never thought that I'd be a writer because I've never been somebody that can plan before they start. But what I'll do is literally like sit down, think of the first sentence, write the entire column, and then I'll go back and try and make it make sense and like, you know, shape it. Or I send it to my editor at the AV Club and ask her for help.
And then I think a cool result of that is that they read very much like you speak. If you're at all familiar with your cadence or your work, you're reading, you're like, got it. I have Cameron in my mind. I get it. It reads just like she sounds.
Yes. I think that's what I realized is that I can just write myself. I can write as myself because I didn't realize that until doing, I think, honestly, even the first 6 months, I was not aware of the fact that that's what I was doing. But it's been a great gift to realize that it can translate, that like the way I speak can translate to written stuff because I'm working on a book right now. I'm about to get into that full force, and that would be a really scary thing, except that I'm just going to use my own, like, hey, you can do this, kid. You get up on stage all the time and talk for hours. Same thing.
Cameron Esposito will perform at Mass Mocha in their Club B10 on Saturday, May 9th at 8 p.m. Thank you so much for letting me call you at your hotel and talk to you about yourself today.
Oh, no problem. Just wish you could have been here for the breakfast potatoes we had earlier.
Thank you, Cameron.
All right, take care.
Cameron Esposito will perform at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts this Saturday at 8 p.m. Rhea Butcher will open. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.